Welcome back to the Inside Pass News 24's dedicated Rugby World Cup podcast. My name is Lloyd Bernard in the Cape Town studios at News 24 headquarters here, joined via our Johannesburg studios, in our Johannesburg studios via WhatsApp call, Sim Kiwe. Have any Sim. Morning, Sim.
How's it, Lloyd? How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
That's all good, it's all good.
Good.
Actually, I'm filling in for, I'm breaking up the halfback pairing, am I?
Big shoes to fill. I'm not sure if you caught any of that Namibia game last night, Sim.
No, I didn't catch as much of it because I was motioned.
Well, I tell you, it was tough to watch at times. Shame Namibia on the receiving end of a tough day at the office, losing 96-0 to tournament hosts France. We're going to just be looking at what's happened so far in the weekend, building up to what is a bumper weekend of Rugby World Cup fixtures starting tonight all the way through the weekend again. It's the third weekend of fixtures. It was a tough one, Sim, for Namibia, and who are obviously under the tutelage of former Springbok coach Alistair Kutsia and former box scrum coach Matthew Proudfoot. So it was a tough one to watch. This is Alistair's World Cup moments and obviously not going according to plan. But I mean, it's just so tough for the Minnow Nations. I think the guys on commentary yesterday at one point said, Namibia in an entire four-year World Cup cycle are probably playing, as many tests against proper opposition as a normal, top-tier rugby nation would play in a year. So it is incredibly difficult for them. But, I mean, what do you make of fixtures like that when you just get these landslide, results, almost 100 duck? Can that be good for the tournament? I mean, how far can you say it's all about the Rugby World Cup experience?
It's... The way I've always looked at it, I mean, I saw some of the comments on Twitter overnight, people basically saying, well, I saw one which was quite strange, saying that the tier two nations and, should have their own World Cup. And I was just like, well, what's the point of a World Cup if it's kind of like subdivided into, more than one World Cup? I get those concerns, but for me, it's always been very simple. You've got to start somewhere. And 96-0, unfortunately, is where you start. And, the example to use, the obvious example to use, will always be Japan in 95, who shipped 135 points or whatever it was against the All Blacks and beat South Africa in 2015. How many years later was that? Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of where I'm coming from, that you've got to go through it. In terms of, the pain or the growing pains of becoming a better rugby nation. I think it is a bit scandalous that these countries play as little as they do, simply because if one thing has been proven to us is that the more game time they get, the better they do get. I mean, it's not even rocket science. It's literally how sport works. The more opportunities to play you get, the better you get. Ask the Fijians, they'll tell you.
No doubt. And I'm sure those guys on the field, in the years to come will look back and be very proud of the fact, as they should rightly be, that they played in a Rugby World Cup. It wasn't without damage from a France perspective. I mean, Captain Antoine Dupont with a facial injury that looks pretty serious, and he now reports suggesting that he could be out as far as the semi-finals. I mean, that's a huge blow for a game like that where there was actually very little to gain. They've now lost an awful lot.
Yeah, that's exactly it. One of the weird sort of things patterns I've noticed is that teams have gone about the group games so differently. If you look at the box played Scotland, and then they made 14 changes, and then, in the third one, they've got a 7-1 split. So with the box, you don't know what they're going to do. But, you get a team like Ireland who've, the moment they got into the tournament, they just decided, okay, we're going to play, our best team pretty much, from the beginning, even for the smaller games. So you'd like to think that the French had the option, especially in a game that would go on to win 96-0, to not play their captain. They obviously went with playing him, and they could well, pay the price. I mean, look, France already missing, Bay, Willemse, and I forget who else they're missing because they got Dante back. Entermark. So they've already lost quite a few. They've lost quite a few sort of very important players. To now add probably the one guy they cannot afford to lose. I saw a video during the week with Ronan O'Gara talking about the influence of DuPont on a rugby game. I mean, he just basically made him, you know, he made him sound like a guy that was basically made in a lab in terms of, you know, the attributes he has physically and the attributes he has mentally. And of course the skills that he has, he made him sound like basically like, you know, the best player in the world. Probably, you know, like literally the Messi of rugby. So to lose that is a big risk. Look, they still got a very good squad. If we remember well, 2 or 3 years ago, the French were touring with a third string squad and, you know, they nearly won tests in Australia using that squad. So they've got depth, but, you know, it's one thing to have depth and it's one thing to replace DuPont. So they've got some problems.
Let's get into the weekend fixtures. And tonight there's a very tasty one. Argentina, who we haven't seen since the first weekend when they went down to England, are in action against Samoa. That's at 5:45 this evening. That's a very, very important game because, you know, if Samoa are going to do something and make a play at a playoff place, this really is the game you would imagine is the one they're going to have to win to get over the line. Samoa did win their first match last weekend. They beat Chile, and Argentina obviously 0-1 after losing to England. So, I mean, this is, you know, for both sides, as big as it gets.
Yeah, it's massive. It's one of those strange sort of games in terms of the pressure that Argentina suddenly find themselves in. It was one of those strange things where at first, maybe when the groups were announced, you would have expected England to be, you know, obviously the best team and then the first team to sort of emerge from the group. But what's since happened is, you know, obviously with England's patchy form leading up to the tournament proper, what then happened was Argentina, because of how well they'd done in the build-up to the World Cup, kind of became the favourites in the group. But then, you know, they really, I mean, to quote the Aussies, they really dropped a bundle. They dropped a bundle in terms of they were given a gilt edge opportunity by England, you know, who obviously, you know, played most of that game between them, you know, with one man down with Tom Curry's red card. And they didn't take chance of that. I mean, it was literally, for me, I was actually at the stadium. It was literally one of the most clueless performances I've ever seen. Yeah. Versus, funnily enough, the most clued up performance in terms of, you know, what, you know, how Ford sort of moved the chains. You know, England are limited, but they fit and they know how to play to, you know, it's not even their own strength. It's just the strength you need to have in tournament rugby, which is basically, you know, are your forwards doing their job? Is your, you know, are your set pieces okay? Are you sort of competent at breakdowns? Is your defense good? And is your kicking good? You know, that's all they've had to do because obviously they've lost so much confidence. But long story short, Argentina had a massive opportunity there. Now suddenly they find themselves, you know, facing a game which quite easily could, you know, see them eliminated from a tournament that, you know, a week or two before they were expected to advance into the quarterfinals. So a massive game for both teams. But I must admit, if Argentina play to, you know, play well, they still have, you know, what it takes to beat Samoa. It's not like, you know, it's not like Samoa beat England, you know, in that one win. They, you know, they beat Chile, which you would expect to happen. So I'd be surprised if they don't, if the pressure itself doesn't sort of pull Argentina together to make sure that, you know, they get over the line in terms of getting that first win, and then we can see, you know, what happens from here on in.
There are three fixtures on Saturday, and you know, the main event is obviously at 9:00, where South Africa plays Ireland and Paris. Before that, though, the first game tomorrow is Georgia, who would, you know, expect to get their tournament up and running. They've also only featured once; they lost to Australia in their first game, and actually would look at this pool, you know, with opposition like Fiji and Australia, even in that first game, and Wales, thinking, you know, if we get a couple of things right here along the way, who knows? So, you know, this is their kind of slam dunk fixture that they won't want to slip up on. You'd expect them to get past Portugal and then England in the second game, you know, the same against Chile to, you know, make it 3-3 for England. But let's talk about South Africa versus Ireland at 9 o'clock tomorrow night. Do you think we've chatted 7-1 enough this week, Sim?
Well, as someone who wrote that, you know, the 7-1 split was kind of like blurring the line between genius and being so smart you're being stupid, and gotten the requisite abuse for it. So I had a very fascinating discussion yesterday with the Stormers forwards themselves. What is it that you seek to get when you go 7-1 in split? And it's pretty much as everyone understands, which is you want relentless physicality and you want relentless sort of energy to make sure that obviously you try and knock Ireland off that game of theirs that's so based on speed and tempo. Apparently the easiest way to counter speed and tempo is basically to be as physical and turn everything into a dogfight, i.e. every ruck into a dogfight. And then, you know, the next question I asked him was, well, if the 6-2 split can do the job, you know, why go the extra man? And he basically said, well, 7-1 is basically 6-2 on steroids. Mm-hmm. Essentially what he means by that, almost like the psychological effect of it as well, when you, as the opposition pack, are kind of like, you know, during a break and, you know, they're going to bring on the reserves, and you basically look up and they've got like seven other forwards coming on, you know, from the opposition.
Yeah.
It's kind of demoralizing. So yes, we've spoken an awful lot about it, but I think at some weird level, we haven't spoken enough about the tactics around it, you know, why you do it. How is it likely to work? Yeah. I think a lot of the reaction has kind of almost been from an emotional perspective where, you know, it's about the morality of it, you know, whether players, you know, could get injured, you know, professional guys, you know, could get injured, or even a take like mine, which kind of, you know, says, oh, that's blurring the line between genius and stupidity or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was nice to hear someone who kind of like tried to break it down from the perspective of, you know, at a tactical level, what does it achieve? And frankly, you can see it. But obviously, as we all know, it comes with its own risks. You know, if the Boks have two backline injuries, we're already down to Quagga Smith playing as one of the backs. And if, you know, you suffer an HIA somewhere along the line, then yeah, you've got real problems. What do you then do? Yeah. So it's a big risk to take, but it's a big risk they've obviously decided to take. Mm. And I've been very impressed by the fact that Ireland have sort of countered that by calmly going 5-3. So it's two teams, you know, number one and number two in the world, that are clearly very confident in their own methods. And, you know, tomorrow night, somewhere around 11 p.m., we'll know, you know, who was right to stick to their guns.
Mm. This, of course, Sim's interview with Stormers forwards coach Rito Hlungwane, who's just the nicest guy and an incredibly insightful rugby mind. And a couple of things that stood out for me, Sim, from the piece this morning, which I would encourage readers to go and check out, your Q&A with Rito, was, you know, making the point that actually, you know, bringing on seven guys at once is how this thing has its most power, you know. So, like, breaking up the substitutions into maybe three pockets of, you know, two and one of three or something like that, actually dilutes it a bit. That if you're going to maximize the power of the 7-1, when you bring on the guys in one whack, it actually has a bigger impact, which I found interesting. And then the other thing that stood out to me was that the one guy who stays on once you've taken seven forwards off the field, in his mind, is Peter Steph Du Toit. I mean, some really interesting points there.
Yeah, like I said, you know, pretty much everywhere, because I kept sort of trying to ask the next question and the next question and the next question, because, you know, the reason I asked about, you know, how many do you substitute at a time is because you've seen time and time again, when you sort of telegraph your substitutions, what you sometimes do is you disrupt the natural game, I mean, flow of the game or rhythm of the game. And so that's why I asked the question, like, you know, isn't, you know, if you're going to change as many as seven guys, aren't you going to disrupt the rhythm? And his thing was, that's how it works. And the second thing then becomes timing as well. But he also did add the fact that, you know, with the sort of anomaly of not having, say, a Marks and or a Bongi Mbonambi coming off the bench, you now have to kind of think a little bit twice. You know, the timing of when you're going to make that substitution will be affected by when exactly do you want to expose Dion Fury, who until last week hadn't played hooker since 2018, to basically one of the best packs and lineouts in the world. You know, how many minutes do you want to do that for? So he did kind of sound like someone who thought, as much as he would love to see all seven come on, maybe there might be a situation where Bongi stays on and as late as he possibly can, and the last sort of substitution off the forwards to come off the bench would be a Dion Fury, simply because you don't quite know what you're going to get with him playing against the lineout of this, you know, of this elite level. So it's been quite interesting, because you kind of look at the whole bomb squad thing and you think, oh, well, it's just a matter of shock and awe, and you know, you just empty out the bench and you see what happens. You know, there is such a thing as, you know, when exactly to do it, and if you get that wrong, you know, you get none of the benefits that you were obviously hoping for.
The one thing I want to say about this game as well, and I've heard a lot of, you know, commentary around the fact that it's almost like a free hit for the Springboks, because, you know, it's they're in the quarterfinals already anyway, and, you know, because they've done enough, and, you know, they've got the game against Tonga to come, and they're going to be in the quarters, so they can afford to experiment in this way. I mean, do you buy into that at all? I mean, they haven't. They quite simply haven't secured a pathway to the quarterfinals yet. I mean, mathematically, things can still happen. South Africa lose tomorrow badly, let's say, and, you know, Scotland do one over Ireland and you know, canter through the rest of their fixtures. All of a sudden it gets a bit tight. You know, if South Africa lose to Ireland, Scotland beat Ireland, then it's a bit closer. I mean, do you think there's any feeling in that Bok camp around, you know, having already done half a job to get into the quarterfinals? It seems to me like there's still an awful lot to get done.
I feel exactly the same. I think it's incredibly disrespectful to Scotland to say that, it's a foregone conclusion that they will, you know, they will lose to Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand Scotland losing to South Africa because they don't play South Africa often. You know, it's, you know, the challenge, you know, the with the forwards and the defense and, you know, the kicking even is kind of like totally different to what they're exposed to in the Six Nations. But, you know, you kind of look at it and think, well, with Ireland, even though Ireland is clearly the better team and seen as the bigger team, you know, they're more used to playing against them, which basically means there's no real fears there. You know, they can actually, on a good day, sort of turn them over. So I don't understand the talk about, South Africa sort of being in pole position to sort of like, you know, to get out of the group anyway. So I don't think they would have taken such a big risk if they didn't feel like they needed to, you know, if they didn't feel like they needed to win this game. I'll explain that by saying, we all now fully understand that what was explained to us before the World Cup at Twickenham as a happy accident, i.e. the first time the 7-1 split bench was unfurled or unrevealed to the rest of the world, wasn't an accident. It was a plan. And it was a plan aimed at basically destabilizing New Zealand, who, if you look at the game in Auckland in the Rugby Championship, had basically decimated the Springboks by basically playing at pace and at high tempo in that first 20 minutes that we've spoken so much about. So essentially, these guys came up with what they thought was a plan to destabilize that. And the moment it worked, to the tune of a record victory over New Zealand of 35-7, it then became a potential sort of solution for a team that plays like the All Blacks, which is Ireland. They also like to play at tempo and at speed, and the whole point is to do exactly the same thing all over again. And of course, sure, there is an element of risk, but if it works in this instance, and somehow these two teams meet again in the final, now the Boks have a blueprint of how to try and nullify, you know, what was, you know, a playing style which got the better of them, you know, at the end of last year. So I don't buy the fact that they're treating this as a free hit. If they're treating it as a free hit, for example, maybe someone like Pollard would have started because, well, you need to get some games into him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Of course, by the time Scotland do have that game against Ireland as well, South Africa will be done. So they'll know exactly what they need to do. So, I mean, if you picture a situation where Scotland go, we got to get the 4 tries and we got to win the game and we're through. That's certainly not impossible to see happening. Scotland, of course, play the first of 2 games on Sunday. And that is, you know, given everything we've just spoken about in the context of Pool B, a key game. Scotland against Tonga, who, you know, again, will be looking at that fixture, hoping to do something. You would expect Scotland, I suppose, to get the job done. But the main event on Sunday, and certainly the one that's going to command a lot of eyeballs and a lot of interest from us, is your mate Eddie Jones, Australia and Wales in a crucial clash. I mean, if Australia slip up there, you know, that's curtains really for their Rugby World Cup. I mean, geez, you know, there's a lot of criticism that I've seen coming out of Australia, particularly around the squad selection that Eddie picked. I mean, you know, I guess that Fiji result really has just, you know, changed everything for their World Cup. But, you know, I mean, defeats against Wales here and they really are in a spot of bother.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's one of those things that have been coming for a long time for Australia. If you think about it, it's weird when Australia fired Dave Rennie end of last year. I fully understand the results had kind of like stopped coming, and you know when the results stop coming, you know the suits get nervous and they decide to try and get somebody else. The fact that they went with Eddie, it seemed like, you know, a nice quick fix. But I don't know if the Eddie they knew from way back when in terms of quick fixes, you know, was the same Eddie as this one. This Eddie Jones has, you know, kind of gotten so in love with the idea of tinkering or finding new ideas and new ways of doing things. It's almost as if he's at the point of sort of reinventing the wheel in terms of, you know, some of the things he's trying. He's almost like trying too much. And that's kind of like, for me, that's what kind of like ended things for him with England. You know, if you look at England, I know that they would be very upset to hear this, but England are basically like a poor man's South Africa in terms of how they play rugby. They also rely on a big pack. They rely on a kicking fly off, rabid defense, and making sure that, you know, they set pieces are good. That's kind of how we play. And Eddie kind of like kept trying to change them into this team, you know, that almost plays like New Zealand or tries to emulate some of the things that New Zealand do. Yeah. Sometimes you've got to just work with what you have. And I think where Eddie's made a mistake here with this tournament is that there are very basic things with tournaments, which is you need experienced guys. Yeah. You know, you need your experience. It doesn't matter if you're going to have a decent campaign, you need experience. Granted, it sounds like he had a free hit because I no longer think he has it now, especially if they don't advance or if they lose on Sunday. It sounded like he had a free hit until 2027 because they're hosting that tournament. And the thinking was kind of like, oh, well, it's fine. He can go with a young team and basically, you know, develop them. Mm. But how harmful is it to not advance from your group into the quarters at least with that young team, and then you've got something to work for? You know, if you get out of the group stages, it's almost like you've got everything to work for, as opposed to, oh, we've just got to do X, Y, and Z to get to the four. And that, for me, is largely due to the fact that he left a lot of the experienced players. You don't blame him at some weird level, simply because, you know, the Hoopers and the Coopers that everyone's talking about, they did not look so flash when they played against us. So it's quite a catch 22 for him. It's like, yes, you need your experience, but what if your experience isn't playing particularly well enough? And the decision for, you know, Will Skelton to be a leader, I'd never seen Will Skelton as a leader anyway. And suddenly he was, you know, the leader of this team. So it seems like a lot of experimental mistakes have been made in how this Aussie team was put together. Mm. An Aussie team, I actually think, is actually quite decent in, you know, as individuals at the moment. It's just they don't have the wherewithal to win sort of important games or the experience. So I fear for them because I think the wealth, you know, to go back to Rossi and chasing the sun. You know, they're a team that doesn't go away. They're tough. You know, they've also had their rough moments before the World Cup. Yeah. But what they have is inherent toughness and inherent sort of ability to play tournament rugby, which is why I then suspect that in a pressure game of this magnitude, I would put, you know, I would put my money on the Welsh to win as opposed to the Aussies.
It's coming from Sim, who has confessed to be an awful, awful Super Brew player and predictor of results. So, yeah, good luck to the rest of the Super Brew Warriors for that one.
For once, I was trying to sound, you know, like confident, but yeah, now that you've pricked that little bubble.
No, it is for me, that one's a coin toss as well. I mean, good luck to the Super Brew Warriors out there trying to pick a winner there. Sim, thanks so much for joining us. We'll leave it there. Three main event fixtures this weekend, I guess. Tonight, Argentina, Samoa, 5:45. Tomorrow night, Saturday, South Africa, Ireland at 9:00. And then the big one on Sunday at 9:00 also is Wales and Australia. News 24 will be bringing you all of the action throughout the weekend. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been the Inside Pass. We'll chat again next week. Cheers.